Next slot on our packed agenda is Johnny talking about revolutionary activity. Any volunteers for a chair for the discussion afterwards?
I will volunteer, if you'd like.
Yeah.
I won't say a word.
That's a fib.
Right, okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you want to...
Okay, all right. So, hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. The title of this talk is Revolutionary Activity. So what I'm basically going to argue is that the party should support the principle of class-wide trade unionism and direct action. And I'm going to go into my main thesis soon. But before I do, I just want to make something sort of clear, just so that people don't think that I'm saying something that I'm not saying. So what I want to say first is that I think that everything that the party does, it should do, and this isn't a criticism of anything that the party does do at the moment. So that is to say that if we want socialism, we need a party that stands for socialism and only for socialism. Two, we need a party that propagates socialism, you know, by example, you know, publishing magazines, holding talks and debates, and recently, you know, kind of making films and sort of making ourselves known on the internet. So in other words, there needs to be a party that puts forwards the case for socialism and only for socialism in the kind of ideological sphere, if only just to keep the idea of socialism alive, which the party, to its credit, has done very successfully for over 100 years now. Three, there also needs to be a party that enters the political sphere. And one advantage, of course, of entering the political sphere is that we can use the platform given to us every time we stand someone for parliament, you know, to propagate socialism, to do, you know, thing number two. But more importantly, when we have a socialist majority within the working class, the most democratic and the least bloodiest way of taking the state away from the ruling class is through the ballot. Anarchists obviously like to criticise us for this position, but when you get to the anarchist idea of dealing with the state, I think it soon becomes clear how kind of just fantastically suicidal it is. and I don't really have time to kind of go into the SPGB criticism of anarchism, but yeah, I believe in the principle of sending delegates to parliament in order to wrestle state power from the captured class. Number four, I also think it's vital that this party, the SPGB, is hostile to all other political parties and remains standing only for socialism. And this, I think, is because, in a way, the anarchists are right, and William Morris was right, that entering into the state is a very dangerous thing to do. It's less dangerous than all the other options, but I think to send delegates to Parliament, we shouldn't underestimate... That's quite a risky and kind of problematic thing for the party to be trying to do. And the reason it's dangerous is because capitalism is just a dangerously malleable system, and it's brilliant at either kind of neutralising its enemies through brute force, as it has kind of done in the past, but really, like, what it's proven itself really good at is for kind of co-opting them under its wing and making them part of its fabric and part of just a, you know, just a normal bourgeois political party. And history has just kind of proven this definitively. Parties that kind of enter the political sphere, attempting to be both revolutionary and reformist, invariably just end up being reformist. And that's true wherever you look. If you look at you know, the ANC in South Africa, if you look at the Social Democratic parties in Europe, or if you look at a lot of the people in the early days of the Labour Party, you know, some of which said, oh, yeah, you know, we believe in a moneyless, stateless society. Of course we do. But in the meantime, we've got to try and be reformist. Invariably, they end up just being reformist. So it's clear that a party seeking socialism has to be hostile to all other political parties. And this talk isn't a criticism of any of the activities I've just mentioned. So to recap quickly, in order to get socialism, one, we need a party that stands for socialism and only for socialism. Two, a party that campaigns and propagates socialism and only socialism in the kind of ideological sphere. And three... a party that seeks to be a vessel whereby the working class can use the kind of fairly limited democratic channels available to us in order to dispossess the capitalist class of the state and their monopoly on violence. And four, we've got to be hostile to all other political parties in our attempt to do this. But obviously, in this respect, I'm kind of preaching to the choir. So And the purpose of this summer school is to kind of try and look at new perspectives on socialism, which is what I'm going to try and do. So what I want to ask is, well, what about the kind of non-political and ideological sphere? So what will the party's attitude be in particular to trade unions? At the moment, I think the party kind of considers trade unions a necessary part of capitalism and the way of defending workers. But I'm going to ask, can they ever be more than that? Can they ever have a transformative power in terms of getting rid of capitalism? So my main thesis is basically that there's kind of two sides to the coin. So on one hand, there needs to be a party that campaigns for socialism and only for socialism. And when we have a socialist majority, we need a party that enters the political sphere to take part from the capitalist class. But on the other hand, much of the struggle for socialism will take place outside of the ideological sphere and the parliamentary kind of political sphere in trade unions, but not necessarily just trade unions. I think a lot of what I'm going to say would also apply to things like squatters groups and tenants associations and other kind of organisations of working class power. And I think it's worth asking what these organisations will look like, what they're likely to look like as kind of socialism and socialist ideas develop. But more importantly, I think, what should they look like? What should we as socialists want to see these organisations look like? So during this talk, I'm going to argue kind of two things in regards to trade unions and what I'd call like class-wide unions. One is that the right form of trade union activity can and does lead to an increase in socialist ideas. And two, whatever our attitude to class-wide unionism might be, even when socialist ideas take hold amongst workers, I'd say it's likely, if not inevitable, that more democratic, radical and class-wide forms of trade unionism will emerge. And the party kind of already calls for more democracy in trade unions, but I'm going to argue that it ought to come out more explicitly in favour of industrial, even better, kind of class-wide unionism. An example would be along the lines of the IWW. And I don't know if everyone knows what the IWW is, but should I just say a bit about what the IWW is? So the IWW was formed, I think, at the beginning of the last century, and it was formed on the principle of leaderless organisation among the working class, having a class-wide trade union that isn't specific to workplaces, and doing what they kind of call building a future society in the kind of shell of the old. And I just want to kind of map out the kind of the sort of different party kind of camps on this issue, because I think the party kind of seems to be split into three loose camps on this. And kind of split might be a bit stronger word. I don't want to make out that there's sort of, you know, some big feud going on in the party, but I think there's kind of three sort of historical tendencies within the party. So you've got kind of camp one, and this was the kind of anti-trade union stance, or what I would call maybe the reluctancy stance. And I think this stance really kind of disappeared from the party when socialist studies split. And this stance kind of sort of reluctantly tolerates trade unions, but sees them at best as kind of a sort of needed thing within capitalism to defend workers, but at worst a kind of a form of reformism that acts as a distraction from creating socialists. And I'm not going to spend too much time arguing against this position, because I don't think it's one that anyone or many people in the party subscribe to now, although if you do, then you can obviously tell me about it later. And then camp two, I think you have the kind of majority party opinion. And this, I think, is the kind of official party stance, which is that trade unions are a necessary defence within capitalism. Workers, therefore, should organise into trade unions. You know, they're not just kind of purely distractions. They are necessary. But no particular stance on the form of kind of unions workers should join or any kind of particular stance on organisational questions. So this kind of the general attitude, I think, in this camp is kind of, if you have a union in your workplace, yeah, of course you should join it, and you should campaign against it being affiliated to the Labour Party, but don't kind of delude yourself into thinking trade unions are anything more than defences of workers within capitalism, and the exact way a kind of union is organised, what it does is kind of just really up to the kind of individual members to decide how best, and there shouldn't be a kind of party stance on it. And then you have kind of camp three, And for the sake of argument, we'll call this tendency the kind of class struggle tendency, or the IWW tendency. And it's this tendency that I intend to argue for. And I don't claim to speak for any kind of individuals in the party on this, but just in kind of general conversations with the party, I've noticed that there's a few people that kind of tend to agree with me on this issue. And I thought, at least, you know, at the worst, I can just kind of bring attention to this and we can have a kind of discussion about it. So we would argue basically that trade unions can, in certain circumstances, have a transformative power. In other words, the kind of right sort of trade union can form part of the development of socialist ideas and can play a big part in the building of socialism. And in reverse, we'd say that with the development of social ideas will inevitably come the forming of what we'd call the right sort of trade unions. So this obviously just then begs the question, how best to define the right sort of trade unions from a socialist perspective? Obviously, I want to argue that some trade unions ought to be advocated by socialists over others. And this is obviously not just in terms of how we think they can kind of best defend their members within capitalism. For example, you know, we sort of tell them to disaffiliate from the Labour Party because it's impractical for a trade union to be affiliated to a party of capitalism. That's true. We should say that. But I don't think that's the only question is a kind of practical question of how best workers defend themselves in capitalism. The other question that I think we should be asking is how which trade unions best advance a socialist cause, which I think they can, and some people probably think they can't. So you'll get your turn, don't worry. So here's a list of questions that I think socialists should ask when assessing the value of a particular trade union from the point of view of actually building socialism. This isn't necessarily just to do with trade unions, but any kind of working class organisation. So one question that I think we should ask is, to what extent does it empower the working class? So number one, does it operate on a leaderless basis? Number two, does it have a kind of fully democratic structure that allows its members to make direct decisions over the union and how the union should operate? Three, does it either in its kind of written constitution and propaganda or in its daily activities challenge not just capital by fighting for wage labour, you know, fair day's work for fair day's pay kind of thing, but capitalism, that is to say the mode of production, the social relation of capitalism. And this kind of may be quite a controversial one, but I think we should also ask how radical are not just its goals, but its actual actions. It's my view that as socialists we should support the sort of trade union action that involves not just kind of like legal strikes, but preferably things like workplace occupations, wildcat strikes, and other forms of direct action. Which, of course, the problem is it means stepping outside of the kind of legal sphere. But don't worry about that, because the Tory party are going to make any form of trade union action illegal soon anyway, I should imagine. So, and the question number four I think we should ask is, to what extent does it organise on a class-wide basis? So does it encourage individualism by only organising in a particular workplace or trade, thus kind of disguising our identity as a class? Or does it call for unity of all workers in all industries, in all parts of the world? Now, this seems to be a kind of strange position amongst some people in the party, which is that the kind of like the less radical union, the more it's seen as kind of acceptable for members of the SPGB to join. So, for example, when the IWW decided to kind of emphasise less their whole abolish the wages system, build a new society in the shell of the old thing, in favour of just kind of, you know, they decided to emphasise that element of the propaganda less, in favour of just building a big union membership and just campaigning kind of in workplaces for you know, to build the union. I think there was a kind of general feeling amongst a lot of people in the party that, well, now it's kind of okay to join because they are just like any other trade union. You know, they're just kind of defending themselves. They're just a normal trade union. And I think I'm right in saying that there's even a time in the party, you know, where you could kind of be kicked out for being a member of the IWW because it would be seen as, you know, you sided with the anarchists, that's it, you're no longer a true SPGBer. But now that, of course, the IWW, at least in its kind of propaganda, is less anarchist and more like a normal trade union, there's this attitude, well, sure, you know, join the IWW, it's just a trade union. Well, I think this is madness, frankly. And the reason I think this, well, I want you to kind of ask yourself a question. Are the prospects for socialism more or less hopeful if A, we have however many kind of hundreds of thousands of workers are in United around the principle of a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, and also obviously a trade union that's affiliated to a bourgeois political party, the Labour Party, or B, if those workers are in a trade union like the IWW, which kind of might have some funny ideas about the state and some sort of strange anarchist ideas about how to deal with the state, and I think we're right to criticise it for that. But it believes in the abolition of the wages system, it believes in leaderless organisation, it believes in one union for the entire working class, and it, even if it isn't affiliated to any party or doesn't support any political activity, at least it's not affiliated to the Labour Party. And obviously socialists can't, you know, just kind of wave a magic wand and turn all the Unite membership into IWW members. And I'm not even saying that the party should necessarily change its kind of official stance on this, but I would argue that as socialists, as members of the Social Party of Great Britain, as individual workers, we can kind of push things in the way that we want to see them in terms of trade union activity, and that in doing so we will be advancing the socialist cause. And I'm going to kind of preempt a party criticism here that I've kind of heard a lot and read a lot in the kind of Socialist Standard. So sometimes when you kind of press party members on this, I've noticed that they say, well, trade unions, you know, when we say, our group says, well, trade unions don't just operate to negotiate a fair day's pay, but can play a part in abolishing the wages system. There's this kind of argument of party, well, they say, like, yes, of course they can, but then they are no longer trade unions. But this, to me, is just kind of word games, really. Like, because, you know, obviously, if you define a union as not just a body, as a body that just kind of negotiates for wages within capitalism, then it follows that as soon as it stops doing this, and it's therefore no longer a trade union. Fine, okay. But in my opinion, we kind of need to approach the question a bit more dialectically. Well, I need to define dialectically. Or maybe I could just say it's kind of reciprocally. So, of course, most trade unions at present are at best purely defensive measures. But this says nothing about how trade unions should be, or how trade unions might become, as we see, as hopefully we see, a growth in socialist ideas amongst the working class. So you kind of know what I'm arguing for. So I better start backing some of it up then, I guess. So one thing I just draw upon, I suppose, is personal experience. So I used to work at a restaurant called Ask, which is, some of you might have heard of it, it's a chain Italian restaurant, rather horrible chain Italian restaurant. It's all boil in the bag, kind of bolognese, and just, I don't know. I was supposedly a chef, but I don't really consider that chefing. And you know, we had pretty shit working conditions. We were all kind of, all the people in the kitchen pretty much were on the minimum wage, and all the front of house staff were really kind of screwed over by the bosses, and so we decided to kind of fight back and form a trade union. And I kind of encouraged a lot of people in my workplace to try and get in a union. So one night we kind of all went off to the pub and we decided to kind of to form a union. As it happens, it's quite, I may as well just spoil the end. It's a pretty dire story. I ended up not being called in again and went to itself. And the boss found out. And yeah, he kind of couldn't sack me, but I just didn't get called in again. There you go. Lots of the staff are now unionised, so there's sort of a bit of a silver lining. But there's something in kind of meeting up with fellow workers to discuss how to fight back that felt empowering, and I think was empowering. And so for the first time kind of since working at that place, I felt a sense of community. And organising kind of like that without leaders for yourself, I think it's important to understand as a form of unalienated activity. And there's a quote from Marx now that I want to read. And when I read this quote, I kind of read this quote after I was a communist before I'd tried to form this union. Part of the reason I tried to form the union, but I read this quote afterwards from Marx and it kind of made a lot of sense to me. And you have to excuse the use of the word man here. It's Karl Marx and it was in the Victorian times, what can I say? But anyway, for Marx in the 1844 manuscripts says, when communist workmen gather together, their immediate aim is instruction, propaganda, etc. But at the same time, they acquire a new need, the need for society. And what appears as a means has become an end. This practical development could be most strikingly observed in the gatherings of French socialist workers. Smoking, eating and drinking, etc., are no longer means of creating links between people. Company, association, conversation, which in turn has society as its goal, is enough for them. The brotherhood of man is not just a hollow phrase, it is a reality, and the nobility of man shines forth upon us from the work-worn figures. And obviously, you know, Marx here is talking about kind of already class conscious workers. But I think that kind of all forms of the right kind of working class organisation, leaderless organisation, where workers get together for themselves in a kind of, you know, not in a top-down way, is a form of kind of unalienated activity that gives people a glimpse of what a future socialist society might look like. And I think the question, I'm not going to go too far down the kind of road of alienation, but I think one of the things about alienation is that it's a really difficult thing to conceptualise from the perspective of capitalism. It's really hard to imagine what an unalienated world might look like. One of the arguments I'd say in favour of socialists forming these sort of trade unions is that it'll give us a kind of glimpse of unalienated social labour. And this is something that I think kind of socialists can disagree on. I'm also not saying that anyone is a bad socialist for not doing this. You know, if you have a kind of family to feed and a job to keep, then you may well choose to stick to traditional SPGB activity. And it's also, of course, true that there's a whole kind of branch of the working class that, for whatever reason, aren't in employment, you know, because they're retired or disabled or because they're just unemployed, you know. And I think a question facing a group like the IWW is how best to kind of get these people into the kind of fold of this class-wide activity. And I'm not saying that any of the activity that the SPGB does is any less vital to socialism. So I'm not saying that, you know, like propagating socialism, standing for, you know, in parliament, all that stuff. I'm not saying it's kind of it's lesser activity because it's not direct action. You know, I think anarchists like to kind of bleat on about direct action, but it's a bit kind of like sort of, you know, like kind of manichism. You know, this kind of shit of like, you know, oh, we're getting the goods kind of thing. I'm not kind of saying that. You know, I think everything, as I say, the party does, it should do. All I'm saying is that kind of forming the right sort of trade unions or the right sort of working class organisations can have a transformative power in terms of getting rid of capitalism. The other reason I'd argue this is a question of normalisation. So the SPGB stance that the battle of ideas needs to be fought is correct. But I'd also argue that part of the way capitalism keeps its ideas as a dominant ideas is by normalising itself. And it is this normalisation that we need to fight. Because it kind of gives the impression that there's no conflict in our society in a few ways. And it's got a few kind of tricks up its sleeve for doing this. One way is nationalism. You know, the idea of that workers kind of have more in common with the parasite class of their own country than they do with their fellow workers abroad. I think a class-wide trade union internationally could do a lot to kind of dispel nationalism, and in dispelling nationalism amongst workers, when socialists then come along and make the international case, we're going to have more of a receptive audience to it. Another way is kind of it's just through culture in general, really, and in particular art. You know, I think that's another way that the capitalist class kind of normalizes itself. There's an art critic called Stuart Holm, and he talks a lot about kind of how art serves as a sort of cultural glue to unify the capitalists and the working class around kind of like universal values of kind of beauty and aesthetics. I won't go too far into Stuart Holm stuff, it's all a bit waffly. And democracy as well is another way that we, you know, they give this idea that kind of things in capitalism are kind of normal and fair and everything's all right, you know, or the kind of illusion of democracy. And the other way that I think they just normalise stuff is just through kind of seemingly harmonious financial transactions, like the buying and selling of wage labour, paying rent. As long as these kind of activities can be seen as just kind of like the normal day-to-day things, where just, you know, it's a natural thing that all human beings do, sell their labour to survive, then, you know, we're in trouble. And what I argue is that when people form trade unions and occupy their workplaces, or when they squat a building, it serves to denormalise capitalism. So direct action reveals the holes and contradictions in the system, and in doing so kind of denormalises it, makes it so that it becomes kind of at odds with itself. You know, for example, like nothing, I don't think, exposed the insanity of capitalism more than the sight of squatters being evicted by the police to keep a house empty in a society with mass homelessness. You know, we've got tons of unemployed people, tons of empty homes and tons of homeless people. And meanwhile, squatters that are going in, forming squatters organisations, doing up houses, putting them to use, are getting beaten up by cops and dragged out. Nothing, I don't think, can kind of like, you know, however many socialist standards we publish, nothing can kind of really reveal the absurdity and the sight of that happening. And as socialists, you know, we feed off this sort of action. You know, when every time there's a strike or violent protest, we correctly kind of use it as an opportunity to make our case. Yet for some reason, we don't seem to want to do any of this ourselves a lot of the time. You know, the way we direct our propaganda, I think, indicates that we do kind of see some sort of value in this. So I kind of just want you to kind of imagine if we did live in a form of capitalism in which there were no strikes, there was no conflict, because everything was just kind of kindly negotiated peacefully between the capitalist class and the workers through kind of trade union bosses. This is a sort of, it's maybe a little bit unfair to call it the German model, but it's quite a popular model, I think, amongst the European Union establishment, which is, you know, where you have the trade union bosses and the parasite class every year get together and say, right, how are the working class going to be exploited next year? Let's decide and let's negotiate, and we can avoid all the kind of striking stuff. You know, I think if workers can wrestle back control of the trade union movement to ourselves and organise for ourselves and fuck off these overpaid, sorry, you know, to the overpaid kind of trade union bosses, you know, we're in a better position. I'd say that it'd be much harder for the SPGB to put its case if we have a kind of normalised form of capitalism, because the kind of contradiction of capitalism are less identifiable. So in this sense, we just rest on the class struggle, I think. And whilst we kind of like tend to dismiss a lot of it as kind of like reformist, I'd want to make a distinction between reformism, that is to say, top-down organisation seizing power of the state as a thing that I think we rightly oppose, and direct action, leaderless action on behalf of the working class in our own communities, in our own workplaces. And as Marx says, you know, it's our job, I'm going to massively get this quite wrong, but you know, it's our job to get workers to take off their banners, a fair day's pay for a fair day's wage, and instead inscribe upon their banners the revolutionary watchword, the abolition of the wages system. How much time have I got? I might just end it there.
Plenty of time.
I've got kind of footnote as well, so that's the talk. I've got a footnote. So I mentioned kind of that one of the ways capitalism kind of normalises itself is through democracy, or what I prefer to call the kind of illusion of democracy. And I'd be interested to kind of pose another sort of final question, which is, how much do we actually believe in democracy or in the democratic legitimacy of Parliament? In other words, is it kind of the illusion of democratic legitimacy, or is it an actual legitimate thing in itself? I think it's an important question that we kind of sometimes overlook. If we really believe that democracy as it currently stands is legitimate, then not only should people not be doing the sort of direct action I propose, but they shouldn't even be striking, right? So the Tory government won a majority in Parliament. If Parliament is illegitimate, therefore it follows that they have a legitimate democratic mandate. Strikes, therefore, by individual workers, you know, in the NHS, in schools, etc., opposing the cuts are therefore illegitimate. Of course, this isn't what we believe. No one in the party argues this. We do believe that individual groups of workers should strike against democratically elected governments. But this, I think we should be honest about what this is. This is putting the class struggle and working class democracy before the kind of democratic decisions of the nation, which is no bad thing in my opinion. And I think it's possible to do this whilst also saying the safest possible thing we can do when we have a socialist majority is to send delegates to Parliament. I don't think that there's as much of a contradiction between the kind of what you might call the anarchist position and the socialist position. I think it's possible for us to say, yeah, we should be forming different forms of democratic decision making in workplaces, but we should also in the long run play the bourgeoisie at their own game, basically say, all right, you know, we live in a democracy, now we're going to send delegates to Parliament and we're going to dismantle capitalism. How do you like that? And the anarchists might be right that the bourgeoisie turn around and say, well, you know, stuff you, we're going to we're going to open fire on the lot of you, we're going to storm into Parliament and shoot all your delegates. You know, we don't know. They might be right. But the question I'd ask to the anarchists is, in what situation are you going to have more kind of undecided members of the armed forces, members of the police force, coming over to our side? In a situation where we've at least tried to do it peacefully and democratically and through the state at first, or in a situation where we've just screwed that off all together and fought, you know, set up the barricades, kind of, you know, this romantic anarchist bollocks. And finally, okay, so we claim that Parliament won't be used as some sort of central decision-making force. So when the anarchists kind of criticise us and say, you know, what are you talking about going to the state? How can you claim to be for the working class if you believe in sending delegates to Parliament? We say, and I think it's true, that the Parliament won't be a central decision-making force. The delegates will only go with the aim of abolishing Parliament and bourgeois property rights itself and of just simply taking the power of the capitalist class away from the capitalist class so that the individual actions or the actions of the working class in our workplaces and communities of building socialism can happen. But I think as this kind of develops, socialists have kind of should make use of the kind of IWW phrase that we build a new society out of the shell of the old. I think that this is what the Socialist Party position would have to imply. And obviously, as I say, where the IWW go wrong is kind of in ignoring the need to use things like Parliament at all. But, you know, as socialists, I think we really need to kind of think about how workplaces are going to be transformed. It's a really kind of difficult task, and it's a difficult task not just because of the kind of logistics of what the capitalist class might do, but I think it's also really difficult just from a kind of interpersonal level. I mean, if you think about it, like, presumably some of you have bosses. You go in, you know, as the socialist ideas start to develop, you go in and you start saying to your boss, right, we're going to take over the means of production. Your boss is going to immediately just resist you just on a kind of personal level. And I think that the IWW principle of trying to kind of, like, build workplace democracy and build a kind of structure that can actually transform each workplace on a kind of class-wide basis. It's not to be kind of sneezed at. Just let me read. And given that kind of we in the Socialist Party place socialism as our sole and immediate aim, and we're right to do that, I think it therefore follows that that kind of sending to delegates is our immediate aim. You know, you can't kind of like say let me phrase this right. So if you say that what is required in order to bring about socialism is the sending of delegates to Parliament, and if you also say that we as a party believe in the immediate establishment of socialism and that workers should immediately establish socialism, then it follows that we want to do this stuff immediately. And if we do, then why don't we also advocate for forms of workers-run trade unions that don't just kind of negotiate for Fedders pay, but have as their kind of as their goal the ultimate kind of abolition of the wages system. I don't really want to kind of give a caricature of the SPGB. The SPGB kind of always has been, I think, more open to ideas around kind of workers' councils, industrial unionism than anarchists make out. But I do think that we should kind of just clarify our position on this. And I think, you know, the best way of doing that is just to kind of just open it up to the floor now, and you can say what you think. But yeah, there you go. Thanks.